Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and have Sean in studio. This is a show about what matters most in our life, our minds, our thoughts and feelings and actions and relationships and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. Today, I will share a study from Yale University about unexpected uncertainty can breed paranoia for us, especially in these current uncertain times. Then I will be speaking to Dr. Thelma Reese. She's the co-author of How Seniors Are Saving the World, Retirement Activism to the Rescue. I had a really great conversation with her because I was telling her that I wanted to be able to gracefully age. And we talked about what senior moments, a new way of thinking was. And instead of retirement, can we call it seniority? And we had a really great show. So don't go anywhere. Oh, be sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel or Instagram channel, Facebook, LinkedIn. It's all on Dr. Fujian Zain. And my Twitter is Dr. Zain. We'll be right back with the tip of the week.
Take KMET 1490 AM with you everywhere you go by downloading our free smartphone apps found on the KMET website, KMET1490AM.com. You can also go to the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store on your phone to download the free app. Now you can listen live or play any of your favorite programmers' podcasts using your smartphone. Don't miss out on the free KMET smartphone apps. Go to KMET1490AM.com and download your free phone app today.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
So this week, I've been thinking about kindness, acceptance, and openness. These virtues appear to play a significant role in bringing us together as human beings. They bring us joy, unity, cooperation, and moving us forward. Yet, it is difficult for most people to live these virtues consistently. We have seen anger, hatred, prejudice, negative judgment, destroying marriages, families, societies, and countries. Although every human being has the capability to be kind and accepting, and the minute they feel threatened by a different idea, persons, or color, or culture, or belief, or actions, they resort back to anger and destruction. So how come? How come it is easier to be mean than to be kind? Maybe because we are wired to protect ourselves with our anger when we're threatened as our primary instinct. We become self-preserving, self-serving, and self-centered. Kindness appears to need maybe a more complex thinking. It requires us to go beyond ourselves and think of others. It requires a more mature developmental stage to go beyond our own bubble and extend ourselves to another's well-being. It takes a secure ego state to be able to extend a hand toward another being. Although in some of the infant research, I've also seen that it's such a primal concept for the infants that when they see another infant suffering or trying to get something, they lend them a hand in order to do that. So you know we're wired both ways. The reward of kindness is plenty. Being kind or being around acts of kindness produces oxytocin, you know, the love hormone, which lowers the blood pressure and improves our overall heart rate. Oxytocin also increases our self-esteem, high energy, optimism, feeling calmer and less anxious and depressed since the brain's reward centers light up. Acts of kindness release more serotonin, the feel-good one, the feel-good chemical that heals our wound and calms us down and makes us happy. With all that said, you would assume that there would be more acts of kindness than destructive acts in the lifespan of any human being. Not necessarily. Observe yourself. What makes you act destructively or angrily? When you choose to be kind, when do you have option to do both, being mean or versus being kind? Which one do you choose? And how come? How come do you choose kindness over anger? Or how come in some ways you choose anger over kindness? I think that when we experience kindness and experience the rewards, then we choose kindness. It is a more elevated consciousness to go beyond the self and be for others as well. May you experience kindness and share yourself with others. We'll be right back with the latest research from Yale University.
Hello, listeners. This is Christopher from The Christopher Show. Hey, if you miss one of our shows here at KMET, don't worry about it. You can go to our webpage, and that's KMET1490AM.com. Go to the homepage, click on the SoundCloud tab, and hear any show anytime you want.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Well, welcome back. I'm going to share with you a research that I got from Science Daily, which says, in times of unexpected uncertainty, which is really what we have, such as the sudden appearance of the global pandemic, and right after that, we have all the protests about police brutality that continues to go on, people may be more prone to paranoia. Yale University research suggests in a new study published in the Journal of eLife. When our world changes unexpectedly, we want to blame that volatility on somebody to make sense of it and perhaps neutralize it. Historically, in times of upheaval, such as the Great Fire of Ancient Rome or the 9/11 terrorist attack, paranoia and conspiratorial thinking increased. Paranoia is a key symptom of a serious mental illness marked by the belief that other people have malicious intentions. Now, conspiracy theories, although they don't appear to be a mental illness, but they kind of go on with the same type of paranoia. But it also manifests in varying degrees in general population. For instance, one previous survey found that 20% of the population believed people were against them at some time during the past year. 8% believed that others were actively out to harm them. The prevailing theory is that paranoia stems from an inability to accurately assess social threats. But scientists at Yale hypothesized that paranoia is instead rooted in a more basic learning mechanism that is triggered by uncertainty, even in the absence of a social threat. We think of the brain as a prediction machine. Unexpected change, whether social or not, may constitute a type of a threat. It limits the brain's ability to make predictions. Paranoia may be a response to uncertainty in general, and social interactions can be particularly complex and difficult to predict. In a series of experiments, they asked subjects with different degrees of paranoia to play a card game in which the best choices for success were changed secretly. People with little or no paranoia were slow to assume that the best choice had changed. However, those with paranoia expected even more volatility in the game. They changed their choices capriciously, even after a win. The researchers then increased the levels of uncertainty by changing the chances of winning halfway through the game without telling the participant. The sudden change made even the low paranoia participants behave like those with paranoia, learning less from the consequences of their choice. In a related experiment, Yale collaborators trained rats. relatively asocial species. To complete a similar task, were best choices of success changed. Rats who were administered methamphetamine, known to induce paranoia in humans, behaved just like paranoid humans. They too anticipated high volatility and relied more on their expectation than learning from the task. The scientists then used a mathematical model to compare choices made by rats and humans while performing these similar tasks. The results from the rats that received methamphetamine resembled those of humans with paranoia, researchers found. Now, the researchers hope is that this work will facilitate a mechanistic explanation of paranoia, a first step in the development of new treatments that targets those underlying mechanisms. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Dr. Thelma Reese.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Take KMET 1490 AM with you everywhere you go by downloading our free smartphone apps found on the KMET website, KMET1490AM.com. You can also go to the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store on your phone to download the free app. Now you can listen live or play any of your favorite programmers' podcasts using your smartphone. Don't miss out on the free KMET smartphone apps. Go to KMET1490AM.com and download your free phone app today.
Are you afraid? Are you getting panic attacks? Are you getting bored and can't stand it anymore at your home? Are you finding yourself in a bind with a relationship at home? Are you wondering what all of the fuss is? And are you determined to guard yourself against all others? Or worried about how am I going to pay my rent or mortgage? In respect to the coronavirus stress, I'm offering a sliding scale online psychotherapy for anyone in California and life coaching to anyone in the world who's suffering financially. Please connect with me at Fujian.com, Fujian.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I'm excited to have Dr. Thelma Reese with me. She is the author of the previous books of The New Senior Woman and The New Senior Man, and the creator of the blog Elder Chicks. You can find it in www.elderchicks.com. She's a retired professor of English and education, the former spokesperson for Hooked on Phonics, and has long been active in a national and Philadelphia-based educational and cultural initiative. With her co-author, B.J. Kittredge, which is a former healthcare professional and educator, they wrote the book, How Seniors Are Saving the World, Retirement Activism to the Rescue. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Fujian. It's wonderful to be with you.
It is so nice to see you again. We met in New York Sister Jenna had introduced us in the America Meditating with the Brahma Kumaris resort that we were there. And it was amazing to meet amazing people. And you were writing this book at this time. And I remember talking to you about some of the conversations that I had with myself about not only retirement, but aging. And I really wanted to do it gracefully. And sometimes I thought, it doesn't appear that I'm being that graceful with myself, you know, when I sense that I don't have as much energy, or, oh my God, my memory is doing something. Or, you know, I used to work with clients, Thelma, for like 13 hours, and then I had, and I didn't write notes at all. And I had the ability to have it all and sit down again and do it, and ran four businesses in between those 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I can't. If I actually don't write my notes when my clients are there, I might not even remember them the next time they come in. So I remember we were having these discussions, and you said, wait for my book. You'll understand. So here we are, and I'm so excited to have you on the show. So tell me about your book, How Seniors Are Saving the World.
Well, you know, it turns out that it actually is even more timely than we expected. First of all, the world needs even more saving than we realized when I met you last fall. I think we're in a time of such upheaval, pardon me, that to know that there are these wonderful activists, 24 of whom are talked about in the book, is encouraging. It makes us feel good to know that there are people doing really wonderful things, and that at the end of each chapter, which is about a person, there is a way to connect with that person for the reader, or with a cause if they want to get active themselves. But I think, and when you were talking about your own changes, I think it also is something that lets us know that when we get older, and I will be 87 on Saturday, we are still developing. We haven't stopped. The way we do may be a little different, and that is not to sugarcoat the changes that are challenging. They're there, but there are also opportunities and ways that we grow, continue to grow as we age, as long as we're relatively healthy. I'm not talking about, we are leaving out dementia and Alzheimer's from this conversation. We're talking about people who still are functioning mentally in a way that is relatively vigorous. And that is most of us who are aging, who recognize strengths that we didn't have. When you are rushing to put down those notes, Fujian, that you used to be able to just remember, the content of those notes, I promise you, is even better than it was when you could remember them easily 5 or 10 years ago.
I totally agree that there's a different type of the wisdom that comes, which is not bothered by some of the ego issues that we've had before, let's say. And there's an in-depth way of looking at things. And another thing that I noticed, Thelma, is many of the things that I cared about how human others would look at me or that I needed to impress them upon have left.
Yes.
And then what has been there, it's more of how in depth would I affect them.
This is so true. In fact, I wrote an article recently in which I mentioned that one of the changes in definition that I'm finding now, especially during this period when most of us have been sequestered or on lockdown for a while and had a lot more time to think than we expected to have, is another meaning for the term downsizing. It's not just about things now. We realize that we're getting rid of a lot of ideas that we had, biases. Some things that we realized were biases and didn't recognize them as such, things that seemed to be such important notions that we had about ourselves, about other people, about how we looked, about whether I will be able to get my hair cut again soon. All these things that were so important, even some physical things, some things that would have sent us running to an urgent care. We're not only that we can't run as fast physically, but all of a sudden, something isn't as important as it was before. So partly, I think, that this era of the pandemic has also made us focus in a way that's sharpening our vision as we age, making us think of what's really important.
Very much. One thing that I've read in your book, you said that the new senior moment is when we realize our own growth and our own human development.
Yeah.
Can you share about
that? The idea of the senior moment is kind of a joke, you know, when you can't remember something, you say, oh, I'm having a senior moment, as though I'm supposed to be losing my memory, right? I'm getting older. I'm not supposed to remember where I put the keys anymore. But I'd like to think of a senior moment as a time when you realize I have a new insight. I really have a new idea. That's a senior moment. You wouldn't have been thinking that if you hadn't been learning and growing,
right,
which you still are. One of the people in the book is a very brilliant psychoanalyst. He's now in his 90s, still flying his own plane down to the border where he works with children and the people who are taking care of them. He's a wonderful man, and it was such a privilege to talk to him because I had been rereading a lot of Erickson and about the phases that we go through psychologically and emotionally as we grow up. And it was wonderful to be able to ask him what he thought about this final phase of growth. Are we still developing? Is it not a time when you don't just retire and stop doing something? Your mind is still functioning. You still have the energy to do something. You still have the motivation to make change in some way or to find out what you can still contribute. Mm-hmm. Or for the first time, many people in their older age are just learning how important they can be.
Right. Very much. And you also say age is a number. It's really the number itself can be meaningless. And it's what is it that you're doing at that age that brings some sort of a meaning for you and makes your life meaningful? I know many of the research and surveys that have been out there have really shown that beyond the elderly that are going through a lot of pain, which pain brings a lot of depression, but beside that, most of the elderly actually, and elderly, I'm even talking like 65, 70 and higher, have more experience of gratitude and happiness in their life every day as they age versus the younger partners.
I often think my mother lived to be a month short of 97, and she had excellent grammar, and yet she would use the word appreciate, the verb appreciate, without an object. And I would sometimes say, you know, Mom, appreciate is supposed to be have an object. It's a transitive verb, I would say, as an old English professor. You appreciate something. And then I realized, no, she meant, I appreciate. That's what she used to say. And what it was a description of attitude. And it meant that that was her general attitude, was in finding something to appreciate, right, in everything. And it wasn't that, you don't reach that age without having experienced loss and, for many people, depression, either as a result or for other reasons. And yet, you can come out of that and still appreciate.
And you also have shared in your book how living a life in a certain way, it creates a cause, or it's actually a living a cause. And I think that that type of living, when you are living the cause, also, something like your mom was saying, creates that type of an attitude of appreciation and gratitude.
So true. I think what people find when they get interested in some kind of cause is that the focus stops being just on themselves. And having that focus, take an object where you can be of help in some way, infuses your life with a kind of meaning. And sometimes it even results in people feeling they understand why they're here. They're living for something and not focusing so much on the challenges of their own body's changes, their own losses of friends and worries about the world, but having some actual participation in making something better is an amazing way to live. And it doesn't mean that you won't have downs too. I don't have to tell you, you're the psychotherapist, you can tell me, but don't you think that this is a way when we get out of ourselves for a bit and realize that we're working with, thinking about, helping someone, something else, it adds meaning to our own life.
Absolutely, Thelma. One of the ways of developing is as we're growing, kind of we're picking up everything, learning, trying to find our identity. And at one point, I've noticed, even people who are about 25, 30 now looking at, if I want to spend 8 hours to 10 hours of my day somewhere, I really want it to be something that I enjoy, I'm passionate about. I'm, that it's not just serving me, but it's also serving the bigger cause and the everybody. And I know when people finally find their mate or not, and they choose to have their children, that even raising another human being becomes their cause. And then when, they raise their children to a certain age and that's no longer a path that they need to take, then they take that cause with a little bit of a bigger spectrum for their community or something that they believe in. And we found that, when people do that, they have less depression. They have less of an existential depression.
Exactly. And there are so many side effects. First of all, for one thing, you find yourself automatically engaged with other people who feel the same way about whatever it is that you're working on. So you may meet new people or renew ties, and have a bond in common that helps you in your relationships with others. And it cuts down on what is the worst enemy probably of aging, which is isolation. So you're so much less likely ever to feel isolated when you're contributing to a cause. And it's a way of dealing, for many people, it's a way of dealing with pain. I mean, one of the people in the book is a woman who lost a son, the youngest of her four children, when he was 24, had just finished medical school, and was killed in an accident on a road in Turkey. And I know that road, and I could just see how a bus would have gone over it. It was very dangerous. I remember feeling skittish going along there, no guardrails, a steep cliff. He went over and all the people on the bus were killed. And it was just before he was to come home and start his residency here in the United States. He was on a trip before it. Within months, she had started a whole new nonprofit organization, which still exists and people can read about and learn about in the book. It's international. It's dedicated to improving international road safety. And it was done in his memory and in the spirit that he had, which was of healing, of making things better for people. And it's been something she's dedicated her life to, even as she worked at other things. It's extraordinary to learn about how people can deal with trauma in their lives, even in a way that is helpful to everybody else.
Very much. I think we learn from trauma. You know, every one of us who goes through trauma, we create a lot of resiliency. And you know, instead of post-traumatic disorder, some people get post-growth in bursts, where some sort of a pressure allows us to utilize muscles and wears, things that we've never done before. And then suddenly that becomes a skill, because we would have never actually had the opportunity to learn those skills if it wasn't for that trauma.
Exactly.
You talk about play and in one of the chapters, and it's like, play, just play something, play anything. And it's like that notion of how a child comes in with a curiosity of the world, and nothing is like, I know it, I'm bored with it already. It's more like, ooh, wonder, what is this? And you're bringing that in and introducing it again and requesting, what if we do that again with life?
Yeah, we have to do it too. And sometimes I get carried away, as others do, with Words with Friends, which is the computer version, the electronic version of Boggle, the old word game Boggle. And I will play that with, I play with about six other people online. There are different, all kinds of different games to play on your iPad, or if you are lucky enough to live with anyone who will play a board game with you still, that's really wonderful, or do a jigsaw puzzle or something that doesn't require the same kind of thinking, something new to do. And I just saw yesterday on a Zoom family visit that my grandson and my son-in-law have gotten, and my grandson is 21 and just out of his virtual graduation from college, which we attended on Zoom, and they've just gotten the device that lets them build things just, it seems to me, out of nothing. And they are actually making real things just using electronics. You put plastic in and you can make an actual jar or an actual, I forget what it's called, but there are all kinds of ways to play now that we didn't have and that we can all actually just do. I think anyone who is able to be at least on an iPad as they age can't be bored. If you have any curiosity left, you can just Google anything and go anywhere and learn about anything that you want to.
It's so accurate. I remember I was always looking at, I can't retire, I'm going to be bored, you know, I'm just going to work until, you know, I pass out. I remember my own supervisor and therapist, and she was amazing. She was just amazing. And she passed away, I think she was in her 80s, between clients, like the next client found her.
Because
she just wanted to work for so long. And I said, that's the way it's going to be for me also. Like, I'm going to work until the last minute. And then this concept that you were talking about, which is, oh, there's so much out there that I have no idea. And we have access to it now with the computers and, you know, all the shows that are there and everything. And it's like, even if I don't work one more minute and I'm just observing the world and learning, there's so much that in my lifetime I couldn't even get to it. And you're absolutely right. Never be bored.
Never be bored and never be. I want to somehow get rid of the whole word and concept of retirement, because retirement suggests that you're finishing something, and we're not. We're never finished. We may do something new. We may move on from something to something else, but we don't go into retirement. As long as we're thinking and curious, we will be thinking and about and doing something and learning something new. And it may not be seeing your next client. It may be making your next visual journey, or it may be thinking up the next thing you want to write about or research, or just learn as much as you possibly can about. So I think retirement is over. And I've written an article recently, and I'll send it to you, Fushan. But what should we call this time? I'd like to call it seniority, because it's something that you reach. And it suggests something that conveys respect or esteem. When you reach seniority, if you reach it in the military or in the business world or in high school, it gives you a certain status. Well, I like to think now I'm in my seniority, and I'm spending part of the time writing and thinking and playing. And I think that's the way to spend it if we can. And even if we're beset by some physical challenges, we can be distracted from them.
Definitely. And I think social media has brought a lot of that. I'm so feeling blessed in having, elderly cousins, aunts, and my godmother, and all of them are in Iran, and they all have iPhone and iPad, and we talk, and they're part of my Instagram, and they give comments on, you know, my social media, and I send, you know, we've created like a WhatsApp group from people from all of our relatives from around the world, and some of them, you know, are in mid-80s or 90s, and they're part of our conversation. And within the same conversation, you have a 20-year-old or even a 15-year-old all the way to 90-some-year-old who are part of these conversations, and they're not isolated anymore, or they're not only isolated to the group of their own friends, but it's opened all of us to each other. All of the wisdom of the seniority and all of the, maybe the excitement of the youth and, you know, the idealism of the youth and then the wisdom of the seniors, and they're all there in comments. And I just think it's the most beautiful way of being. and I'm doing things.
Generational contact.
Yeah.
Is so important. And recently I did a webinar for a group in New York, but it had people from all over the country, and it turned out also Canada. And this was a group about positive aging. There was a young man in the group with whom I've since been in contact, and we've had long conversations. He's just starting college. He was the only really young person in that group that day. The others were all 60 and older. I was probably the oldest person there, maybe one other older than I. And this young man and I have not only become friends, but colleagues, because I'm working on a course with a university here, a temple, with a psychology professor who is bringing undergraduates together with seniors, teaching a course for seniors that I'm involved with. And we're working together, and we've gotten together with this young man in Canada who is already planning a course for when he gets to go to the University of Ottawa in person when it opens up. He's brilliant. And it's like working with a colleague of any age. It's just wonderful.
Yes. You talk also about control and contribution, and that.
Yeah.
I personally have also experienced this, that the more I age and I grow, I get how much I'm not in control, and I get how selective of the things that I can be in control, and totally let go of the ones that I have the illusion of being in control. And letting go of that has really minimized my anxiety. Like what you talked about, sharpness of looking at things, I've become sharp in, you know, don't just waste your time in things that you absolutely have no control over. And, you know, try to find where is it that you do and then contribute. And I've really experienced that as, you know, kind of like moving along after about 45 and 50. I think more than anything between 50 and 55, that kind of like hammer came down on that.
I think that's so important as we age. I think it almost comes with the territory, and you find it's happening without your being conscious of it. And you realize you don't even want to control most things that you're involved in. And an interesting thing about the activists in the book about seniors, and the seniors in the book run from 60 to 95, is they're not people who want to control organizations even that they've built. They're not in it. They're in it for the meaning of it. It's not an ego thing. It's not something that has to show that I'm a leader in some way. They want the work to be done, whoever's doing it. And so they find, what's the best way I can get this to happen to make the world better? It doesn't have to have my name on it even. So you get to focus on what is the meaning of what I'm doing instead of, is my name out there? And that comes as a shock to some people as they age, who are used to having their names out front, particularly. One woman in the book, I told her I thought she should be the centerfold. But anyway, she has been the head or the instigator of so many important... I'm sorry. That was supposed to have been handled.
Hello.
She's been able to start these things because she hasn't cared about being the head of anything. She's cared about what can we do about climate change. It doesn't have to say it's by me. It's the idea that matters more. And I think the older you get, if you are fortunate enough to live long enough, you find out that that's what counts. It's not your name on anything.
I think what I've also noticed, and based on what you're saying, part of our developmental stage is that we are born with no ego. We're supposed to create a healthy one. And as we create a healthy one, then we're willing to also let it go and become connected with all that is versus holding on to that. So, yeah.
Part of the winnowing away. It's part of, I guess, part of downsizing.
Very true. Very true. And you also say find your voice and speak your truth. Can you say a little bit about that?
Well, I think you do find out finally maybe what you want to say, what you think is, what you found is important. And when you stick to that, it's very satisfying. It's like reaching some comfortable plateau finally, of kind of knowing yourself and feeling you know kind of what it's all about, which is what we're all looking for, I think. If we get to live long enough, I think we're looking for some kind of meaning. And when we find it, it also kind of winnows away a lot of superficiality that we've been dealing with. I would have been much more upset about not having my hair cut 10 years ago when I was going to be on with you and be on Zoom. And I still care about the color I wore, but not as much, not quite as much. And there are things that just, you start to learn about yourself and about other people and accept the changes and accept changes that you don't necessarily like. You know, I'm finding it's interesting among my contemporaries, among those contemporaries that I grew up with and who are left, there are mixed feelings about my new book. They may like the people in it. A couple of people have actually said, I really, really can't stand that you're doing this and I'm not. I think you have to reach a point where it's okay that I'm doing it and they're not, or they're doing something else and I'm not. And understand that I can't do any of the things that the people in the book are doing. They're all different. They're ethnically, age-wise, they're men and women. They're from all over the country. They're a very diverse group of people from all over the country and a couple from India. And they're also different. Everyone is doing things differently. We really are all individuals and have to find our own way, find our own truth, and find like-minded people when we can and contribute something to the world. That's why I write about these people. They inspire me. They don't ever make me feel, gee, I wish I had done that. I'm just grateful that they did.
Yes. Yes. Everyone, Dr. Thelma Rees, the book is called How Seniors Are Saving the World, Retirement Activism to the Rescue. In 1 minute, anything that we haven't covered that you really, really want everyone to know?
I want everyone to vote.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. And where can they find you and your books?
You can find How Seniors Are Saving the World on Amazon. I'm sure also on Barnes & Noble, or you can ask your bookseller. If you type in my name, Thelma Rees, it'll take you right there, or that shortened title, How Seniors Are Saving the World, that will take you there. And you can find my blog, Elder Chicks. It's not what one man thought when we started it. He thought, he didn't look at it. He said, I thought it was a porn site.
Oh my God, that's funny. Oh, well.
Anyway.
Now we know what was on his mind.
Sometimes men write too on elder chicks. So we'd love to have people visit and contribute to that as well. Always an interesting conversation.
It was beautiful to have you. I really miss you, and I hope that we get an opportunity to meet again in person.
I hope so too.
And for all of you who are with us, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. And until next week, bye-bye.